Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Okay, well, with more than 65 million books in print, it probably wouldn't be too hard for Max Licardo to move to a seaside village, put his feet up for the rest of his days, read a few books, in his case, probably write a few more. Instead, the most successful Christian author of our time has been spending the 25th year of his publishing life doing quite the opposite. He's been busy visiting developing nations, seeing the world's needs up close. He's written a book called Outlive Your Life. And for the second time on Open House, Max Licardo joins us to have a chat about it. Max, welcome to Open House again. Really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. It's a great honor. I really appreciate the invitation, and I've been looking forward to this very much, Sheridan.
Yeah, well, it's really good to talk to you again. The last time we spoke, we just talked about all the various things that get said about you in the press, all the publicity packets and things like that. Was it Reader's Digest or Time Magazine that called you America's best preacher, etc.? This time it's 65 million books, 25 years of publishing. How do you feel about those kinds of phrases today?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, you know, I to be honest, I never even set out to be a writer, but I've enjoyed it. I love most of everything about writing. There's some of the editing process that drives me crazy, but I'm very grateful. I really am, and I'm thankful that people read the books, and I'm always excited to hear that they're bringing some encouragement to people's lives.
Yeah, for somebody who didn't think that he would be a writer, to see the outcome is really quite something. This book rests on the idea that our life really can be invested to the point where we can leave something behind. Now, there are three questions that were put to you a few years ago that really kind of rattled your cage and got you kind of lying awake at night and thinking about your own life. Let me put those three questions to you, and you can just explain just how significant those were. The first question was this: if you were a German Christian in World War II, would you have stood against Hitler?
Well, you know, it was the first of the three questions, and I wanted my response to be yes, you know, that I would have. I don't know. I didn't live then. But I'd like to think it would have been yes.
Me too. I don't know if it would have been yes, but I would. You think about what those German Christians who did stand against Hitler actually, the cost it actually was for them, Dietrich Bonhoeffer and the rest, and I just go, well, I don't know if I would have been there. I really wish I could. The second question was this: if you lived in the American South in the civil rights conflict, would you have stood against racism?
And again, I think I would have. I hope I would have. But given the circumstances, would I have taken a stand? I hope I would have. But it is, you know, there's no way of knowing, and that's why the third question you're about to read is so important.
Yeah, when your grandchildren discover you lived in a day where 1.7 billion people were poor and 1 billion were hungry, how will they judge your response?
Yeah, and that's where we are right now. You know, that's the question that really convicted me. I know there are many needs in the world today, but this issue of hunger and poverty, it should keep us awake at night. I think that there is a sense in which there is a human obligation to be compassionate toward others. And so what I'm trying to do, Sheridan, is give my children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren a legacy about my answer to that question that will set a good example for them.
Well, this book is kind of really written around the book of Acts in the New Testament, where you just kind of look at the lives of some of the earliest of Jesus' followers, these guys and girls who spread out from Jerusalem and took the Christian message to the far corners of the world. And yet you point out just how ordinary they were, and they really were ordinary people, weren't they?
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that keeps us from being compassionate is that we think that's the job of the super saints. But the book of Acts in the Bible shows us that the people who were the most compassionate were just regular people, just like you and me. They were not born with, you know, halos on their head. They didn't levitate when they walked. They were just regular folk. And yet that they said, you know, by God's help, I think I can make a difference in my world. And they began working in their world. You know, they began right there in their hometown. And I think that's an important takeaway here. You know, all of us, you don't have to travel around the world to find somebody in need. Just right down the street or in your neighborhood or just in the next district, there's going to be somebody, if you'll be sensitive to, that you could really make a difference and you could help their life.
Max Licato is with us on Open House tonight. Before we get into these kind of, you know, practical ideas of how we can actually change the world, which you've got actually in the book, which is very, very helpful and practical, why should we think that our life can make a difference or indeed should make a difference? Why? Why should we try and leave something behind us? I guess we can't go into the practical aspects before we actually answer that question.
But that is a great question, and I think it's a good place to start, because the great discovery that we make is that it really is better to give than to receive. Mm-hmm. The life that is sacrificed for others, quite honestly, is a happier life. It is a better life. I know that sounds even self-serving, but it's the truth. If you find the happiest people, and they are the people who are outside of themselves. Like Jesus said, if you want to find yourself, lose it. Lose it in something that's bigger than you are. And for those who are Christians, we're trying to be more like Christ. And he gave up his entire life, and he wants us to discover the satisfaction that comes from living for something that's greater than we are. Christians also have the promise of when we get to heaven, those works will be acknowledged, that God will acknowledge that I was hungry and you came and fed me, I was thirsty and you came and gave me drink. And we'll say, when did we do that? And he'll say, I was when you came to the poorest of the poor, you came to me. So there's another sense about living our life, not just here on earth, but even in heaven.
Yes.
So that's a great, you know, expands our view of life, and it flips our view of the world upside down. The true happiness is found the more we give ourselves away.
Yeah. All right. Well, you give a kind of 8 or 9 practical tips on how to change the world in Outlive Your Life. Let me give you a phrase, and then you can unpack a little bit for us. First, you urge us to come out of our shells, see the needs around us.
Well, it's so easy to go into our shells because that's a response to some of the statistics, you know, that we read about 1 billion people hungry, 27,000 dying of preventable diseases. One response to that is just to go inside our shell and think, I can't do everything, so I'm not going to do anything. I think the better response is to say, I cannot do everything, but I can do something. I can find that one thing that I can do. And this one thing is usually found at the intersection of our abilities and our passions. You find that one thing. Who is that group of people that you have a real passion for? And who are those people that you seem to connect to? Some people connect with the elderly. Some people connect with the homeless. Find that one group of people and zero in on those people. And there you will find an assignment that you can pour yourself into.
Yes. If we can actually find some certain sense of intrinsic joy or motivation in that, that will certainly make it easier. Sometimes that won't come. We've just got to do it simply because it's the right thing to do. But if we can connect that, and of course, you know, this is where the whole idea of spiritual gifts and talents, God-given talents and abilities comes in, which we've spoken to you about before when we were talking about one of the previous books that you've written, The Cure for the Common Life book. So first, come out of our shells, have a look at the needs around us, really face it square on. Secondly, you've got a whole chapter devoted to a stand-up for the have-nots. If we don't fully grasp God's love for those who go without, his intense passion for the poorest of the poor, we're kind of missing the mark right from the start.
You're right, and I think that Jesus had such a heart for the poor. And that's demonstrated in the very first sermon that he preached. Most people think the first sermon was the Sermon on the Mount, but really the first sermon was a sermon in the synagogue of his hometown of Nazareth. And he began that sermon by saying, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me to preach the gospel to the poor," or good news to the poor. So the very first sentence, right out of his mouth, he's talking about the poor. And he goes on to talk about the blind and the oppressed and how he's going to bring liberty and sight to them. So he made his target audience the marginalized people of his society. This is not easy to do. I know that. And I don't mean to oversimplify the challenge of helping people that are poor. A lot of questions surface when we try to help the poor. How do we know if we're really helping them or just enabling them? Yeah. These are difficult questions. But I think the journey is worth it. I think the opportunity to really help people is worth the effort of thinking through some of these very, very difficult difficult questions.
Yes.
I know that God's heart is a heart of justice, a heart of compassion. One of the things that I really learned in working through this is that many people are poor, Sheridan, because they're lazy and they need to get to work.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are other people who are poor because they're born in a certain place on our globe where they just don't have the opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
There are no streets. There's no clean water. AIDS has ravaged their village. It's like they don't have an opportunity. And these are the people that I think that we can really help just by giving them the basic safety nets that many of us have grown up with and taken for granted.
Yeah.
And finding these people and helping these people is a worthwhile quest.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll never forget being in Bangladesh and driving past some factories where the host that was with us was saying, well, the folks who work there work 7 days a week, and yet they're not making enough to live on. They're not lazy at all. They just do not have the opportunity to earn a living wage.
What a great point.
There is not one cause of poverty, that's for sure. This is Open House. Max Licardo is with us. His latest book is Outlive Your Life. And we're talking about some practical ways to change the world. You were talking about just the importance of recognizing that serving the poor does raise a significant number of questions as to how to do that well. And I wonder if this third point probably helps us out, where you say, you know, you've got to team up with other people, and maybe even team up with organizations who actually really know some of the answers to this, these questions already from the beginning.
That's where I was headed, and I appreciated your point about the people in Bangladesh. I think there are people like that all over the world who are just one crisis away from being destitute. Most of us need help helping these people, and that's why I think that humanitarian organizations are so important. I have found some organizations like World Vision or Compassion that have made a great track record of helping people who are in these situations. I would encourage everybody who wants to really help make a difference to team up with some of these organizations. Might be an orphanage, might be somebody devoted to helping people with cancer or mental illness. But find somebody who is a specialist organization. And if you don't think you can do it on your own, team up with them.
Max, it's probably a good time to actually share just what you've seen over the last little while as you've been you know, recently getting around a number of developing nations. I mean, what did you see that will forever indelibly be in your mind and your memory?
Well, I'll never forget, I was in Ethiopia, and I'll never forget being at a watering hole and looking into this, I wouldn't even call it a well, it's just a hole in the parched earth, and there was a pool or puddle of water there, and I would never have drunk that water. It just looked dirty. Animals had been bathing in it, and yet here came a steady trail of people, some of whom had walked 4 hours to fill up their containers with water. And then they would turn around and walk 4 hours back. I was just astounded. I thought, they don't have time for anything else. They spend all their day getting dirty water to take back to their family. Shouldn't we all assume that everybody should have water?
Yeah.
Well, no wonder they can't get an education. And no wonder they can't find a career. Or they're spending all their time just getting water. That's one of the reasons that all the royalties of this book are going to drill water wells in Uganda.
It's a good move. Another of your points is to practice hospitality. And I wonder whether this is where our developing nation brothers and sisters actually turn around and teach us quite a few things, because you would have felt the hospitality when you go into these areas, into Ethiopia and into Bangladesh. Boy, have we got a lot to learn in our Western worlds, where we've kind of become so individualistic.
You're making another great point, Sheridan. You visit us, you know, like just a few months ago, I was in Mexico City spoke at a church full of people that we would consider the poorest people in Latin America. Yet they would thrill to open their doors They fought over who got to bring the gringo into their house. I mean, it was just it was such an honor to them. Whereas in at least in the United States, I can't speak about Australia as much, but what you insinuated is the same. Mm. We like to get behind our doors. We like our privacy and our independence. Mm. Hospitality, however, is the great tool of the New Testament church. Before they had sanctuaries or baptistries, they had kitchen tables and front doors. Mm-hmm. And they threw open their doors, and they seated people at their tables, and they built their fellowship around the table. And I think this is a great discovery that those in developed nations can make, and we can learn this from other countries.
Should kind of just remind ourselves that all these principles that we're talking about come out of the book of Acts that you've written this book, Outlive Your Life, around just the life of those early followers of Jesus and how they changed the world and so rapidly in the first couple of hundred years. The Christian movement started with a handful of people and developed into a significant number of million people just simply by doing some of these things. When we're talking about this, of course, the principles out of the New Testament also talk about doing your good works quietly. Jesus talked about, you know, not letting your left hand know what your right hand is doing. When we get involved in serving the needs of those who wrestle throughout the world or even in our backyard, this is a key thing as well, at least from the Christian perspective. You don't go trumpeting it around.
You probably have some listeners who have been turned away from Christianity because some Christian was showing off. There's nothing more nauseating than for somebody to do their works to be seen by someone else. Hmm. I don't think the Bible teaches us to do our works so that they can never be seen. I mean, you have to be visible in your good works. Hmm. You know, if you're feeding a hungry person, somebody's going to see that. It's the question here is motivation. Are you doing your works to be seen by others, or are you doing your works because you just want to do good works? You want to help other people. Motivation is key, so we have to examine our motivation. We still want to do our very best. You want to do the best broadcast possible. I want to write the best books possible. We want to have the best humanitarian organizations possible. But we don't want to do that because people applaud us. Ultimately, we want to do that so that people will see God.
Yes.
And there's a big difference in the two.
Yeah. I think of the spiritual disciplines. When we talk about spiritual disciplines or spiritual practices in the Christian context, we normally think of prayer and Bible reading and fasting and things. Well, one of those spiritual disciplines, at least the early Desert Fathers thought, was the spiritual discipline of secrecy, doing things that only God knows. And there is something really beautiful in that. Yes, do your good works, but keep there's a few things to do secretly as well. Now, another point that you throw in is when we're going to live lives that actually get out there and make a difference and change the world, just like those early followers of Jesus did in the book of Acts, get ready for persecution. Get ready for people to actually come against you. Now, in the early church, that meant in many ways being martyred for your faith. Some of them were dipped in tar and set alight. For our countries, kind of normally amounts to no more than a little bit of ridicule in the workplace or in the playground or something like that. But either way, prepare for persecution, you say.
Yeah, and we shouldn't be surprised, you know. Some people are repelled or offended by somebody who's actually trying to make a difference because their example is a threat to them. And I think we just have to prepare for that and not back down, not be surprised. Jesus said this would happen when he sent his disciples out. He said, you will be persecuted, but be strong anyway. So I think we just need to steel up and be ready and know that this is going to happen. And then on the other hand, there are times in which unfair persecution is taking place. Depending upon where you are in the world, a lot of religious persecution is occurring that I think, quite honestly, is unfair. I'm a great champion of religious liberty. I don't think governments exist to promote religion, but governments should protect the opportunity to explore spirituality. And when governments begin persecuting religions, then I think they've crossed into an area that's a basic violation of human rights.
Yeah, I think this comes down to one of the other things that you put, one of the chapters is Don't Forget the Bread, where you're using that in a metaphorical sense, is that the great work that is done by the mainstream humanitarian organizations, UNICEF and the rest, wonderful work that everybody can support. But there is something unique here to the Christian calling, and that is actually the message of Jesus himself, that it's not just about giving provision for the physical or even emotional needs of people, that the whole Christian calling is a very holistic one. It says that people need to be liberated, not just financially, physically, politically, in some cases, emotionally, but actually spiritually. And this is probably where the persecution will often come, when you actually dare to say, there is something so unique about this person of Jesus in history. He wasn't just a man, wasn't just a guru. He actually was God in person. And he has a certain claim over our lives. And when you submit to that claim, your life really will be changed both here and beyond. That is key. If we take Jesus out of that, then it's not really Christian aid or compassion, is it?
Absolutely. And I don't think we've completed our call. I believe that there are some occasions where all we can do is give food, and we should take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. But we haven't really finished our call until we've talked to people about the forgiveness of sins and the promise of the return of God to earth and the promise of heaven. This is the ultimate answer for the human dilemma. You know, you can put food in somebody's belly and it doesn't change their life. But if they can discover that God loves them and that God has a plan for eternity for them, that will literally change them forever. But like you say, Sheridan, that could be something that causes persecution. Because in order to believe that, we have to talk about topics that people don't want to talk about. For example, sin. We don't like to be discussed that we might be a sinner and that we violated and rebelled against God. And yet that's a central part of the gospel message, that God forgives sinners and that he has a hope and a plan for every single person. My story is exactly that. You know, my story is one of by the time I was 20 years of age, I was well on my way to alcoholism. I could drink 6 beers and not feel it. I was leading a life that was just headed down one problem path after another. I was distant, separated from my parents and not my friends. And yet I had one friend who really stuck with me. And my question was, how could God forgive somebody who had made such a mess out of his life already at such a young age? And that friend, over a period of time, stuck with me and convinced me that God could forgive someone just like me. In fact, that God came for people just like me. Hmm. And when I realized that he did and he could and he would forgive me, that was a life-changing moment. And I can remember it so specifically of March in 1975 when I realized that. And it was it literally changed me. And I've never been quite the same since. And I think that's the promise that God offers for every person. Yeah. Is that we've never outsinned his grace, and his grace is available for every person, and it really will change your life.
Well, it's certainly been the whole message of your life, 25 years of writing books. Max Licato, always good to talk to you, and thanks for your time again.
Well, thank you. I'm so honored, and may God's richest blessings be upon you and all your listeners. Yeah.
Max Licato, author of more than 50 books, the latest of which is called Outlive Your Life, You Are Made to Make a Difference.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast, thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.